My place in tech changes every day, but I don't fear the future because I'm with the leader, Pluralsight. Their online learning platform has the hands-on, expert-led courses I need to master new tech skills and create bigger impacts so I can learn quickly and stay ahead. With Pluralsight, I don't fear what's next. I embrace it. Tap in at Pluralsight.com and see for yourself.
Boom, 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 boom. Today on Rambling About Cars, we are trucking ahead because we have new heavy-duty trucks from Ford, Chevrolet, and Ram all debuting at the same time. There's also a little thing, I don't know if you heard about it. It's a 735-horsepower BMW XM. We've got a lot to cover, so without further ado, it is podcast time. I am Christopher Smith, and Mr. Chris Bruce is across the way. It's a week, man.
It is a week, both work-wise and personally.
Yeah, we both got all kinds of stuff going on, but we got everybody covered. We got everything that you need right smack in here, man.
Right. So we're going to kick off the first segment of the show with heavy-duty trucks because essentially, I don't know who kicked the ball rolling here. I know chronologically Chevy debuted first, but I don't know who in what PR department figured out what things were happening, and we got three heavy-duty truck debuts in 1 week.
And you know, isn't it interesting? Just a quick little sidebar before we get going. And also, we should tell you, follow us everywhere that podcasts are broadcast. Follow us on YouTube, Motor One Podcast, all the socials. Like, follow, subscribe, so we can get more followers. We can do more crazy stuff. We just finished the Detroit Auto Show, Bruce.
Yeah.
And if we talked just briefly about the show. Okay. It didn't have quite as many debuts. I mean, it was his first time coming back.
Monterey had more debuts than Detroit.
Yeah. And then a week after the show ends, here are three pretty sizable pickup truck debuts from Detroit automakers. I mean, I don't know.
I don't especially know when you consider there, volume, but these are vehicles that are going to sell in volume to right. A hardcore group of customers, you know, heavy duty truck people. They know exactly what they want and that's what they want. So,
and they pay for it. And yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
New offering from Ford, Chevrolet, and Ram, all coming right together at the same time. In fact, as we're recording right now, the live stream broadcast of the Ford Super Duty, I think, is still going on, but we have information and photos. We have our debut article. It's up at MotorOne.com that managing editor Brandon Turkus wrote up, and he actually attended a backgrounder, so he has a lot of good information. You want to read it. Definitely you'll want to read it because we won't have time to cover absolutely everything here.
No.
But what do you need to know about the new Ford Super Duty? It is, in fact, all new. Ford is considering it a new generation, even though when you look at it, it doesn't look extremely different. I'm just rotating my page here to get to some.
Well, no, Ford says it's 93% new.
Yes,
93%. 7% that aren't new must be like some of the sheet metal styling, because like the front end is close. They do some different things with the way the headlights integrate into the grille. Mm-hmm. It's really slab sided though. Like, well, it doesn't look that new, but it is.
And so, you know, we did say the same thing about the F-150, and there was even a little bit of criticism with the new F-150 with Ford being perhaps a little too conservative, but they can afford to be conservative because they sell more trucks than anybody, and they've done it for a very long time now. Yep. And honestly, when you're in that position, you probably don't want to rock the boat too much. They're not sitting around thinking, okay, how are we going to take down the next guy? Because instead they're thinking about, okay, what are we going to do to make sure the next guy doesn't take down us because there's nobody ahead of us. So I think they can afford to be a little bit conservative here. And I mean, the front end is obviously where you really notice the changes, where you really notice the difference. You have those kind of, you know, just squared off headlights. There's a lot of influence from the F-150.
Yes.
And I like this over the previous generation. I think it's a cleaner look overall. And some of the trucks kind of remind me of like the 80s Ford F-Series trucks, mm-hmm. With some of their grill designs, just kind of like that big, long, rectangular grill. There are different grill styles depending on the trim level. So it's not just like one grill that's right. Black and then on the fancy model, it's chrome. No, I mean, there are different grill designs. There are even some different lighting elements that go around the headlights. But I mean, it is in fact a new vehicle. It does have a brand new engine. You're going to get a 6.8 liter.
Yeah. I think that's worth mentioning. Definitely worth mentioning, obviously, but there are things we know and there are things that we don't know. And yes. I'm sorry I interrupted you, but yes, a 6.8 liter V8 will be replacing the current generation 6.2 liter V8.
And that's based on the 7.3, the Godzilla engine.
Yep.
We heard about that for a while. Ford says it's going to make more torque than the 6.2.
With an extra 600 cc, that's, you know.
How much extra? Well,
we don't know.
That's some of the information that we don't have. We have the launch of the new Super Duty, but Ford hasn't released any information with regards to horsepower or price or right. towing. Well,
here's what we can say. So the current 6.2 liter makes 385 horsepower, 430 pound-feet of torque. So if Ford's saying it makes more torque, we know it's more than 430 pound-feet. The Godzilla 7.3 liter makes 475 pound-feet of torque. So yeah, it would be safe to guess that the number is somewhere between 430 and 475. We don't know where in that gap that number is, though.
Pretty safe guess. Of course, being based off of the Godzilla, it'll be a pushrod engine, which are generally known for making a little bit better low end torque. So it sounds like it could be a pretty good matchup. There is the Power Stroke diesel that's still available. Ford's right. also going to do.
Yeah,
but go ahead.
Ford is going to have a high output version. And so again, the current one makes 475 horsepower. Again, we don't know how much higher that output is, but we can expect the numbers higher than 475. So there's that. It's kind of a bummer. We've talked about this before on the podcast that, you know, these automakers, they introduce these new vehicles and then they say, oh, it's a high output version. Oh, it's going to have more torque, and they don't give us any of those numbers. So
yeah, we don't have it yet.
Whether make an educated guess right. based on what's out there.
Whether they're still trying to dial all that in, get their SAE certification squared away.
Sure.
Hard to say, but yeah, we don't have that information yet, but of course Motor One will bring it to you as soon as it's out there. So yep. Make sure you go into MotorOne.com to catch all the latest. But I mean, we've talked about the new look. We've talked about the new engine. I mean, there's also the interior is updated. There's an optional 12-inch digital instrument cluster now that's available on XLT trims. I think that's across the board, right?
I was under the impression it was optional. I don't know at what level it is an option, and I didn't look closely enough at the press release, if I'm honest, to tell you at what level it's optional. I know it's optional. And that's all I can say.
Okay. No, you're right. It is optional on the lower trims, obviously, to keep costs down. You can still have the manual gauges. Another thing, and this is what was kind of messing me up here. Four-wheel drive is now standard on Super Duties from XLT level on up.
Right.
Which
is pretty much all, because there's XL, but that's almost essentially a work truck only grade. So
right.
Basically any truck a customer is going to buy, a consumer is going to buy, is going to have four-wheel drive now.
And they're all going to have the 10-speed automatic.
Yep.
There is still the Tremor off-road package. It's curious because you have like a Tremor trim level now with, you know, with the with the F-150.
Right.
On the Super Duty, it's not a Tremor trim level. It's still just a package, but that's going to give you your 33-inch tires, your skid plates, diffs, you know, all the heavier stuff for a little bit more off-road duty.
I think that might make sense for that customer, though, because I think so.
You know,
not all of it. If you're towing just on the highway, some of that stuff is going to be less important to you. Whereas if, you know, say you're using it on a farm and you're going through mud and stuff like that, then it might, those features would be more in demand. So it kind of, I could see Ford putting on your PR cap. I could see Ford saying, we're letting buyers kind of spec the truck out to their needs rather than kind of offering it as a trim level.
And I mean, with Tremor, you sort of get the impression, you know, it's a little more, how do I phrase this?
Be nice.
This will be nice. Okay. Your Tremor package, your Tremor trim level, you're going to go out. It's not just necessarily a work truck. You're playing with it a little bit too. You might go out, you might do some off-road crawling. You might go down some trails, just to have some fun. I don't know if there are that many people with a 3-ton, you know, 6,000-7,000-pound big beefy Super Duty, that's in that kind of same mindset where, you know what, we're taking the day off and we're just going down to the mud hole. Sure. No, you're not taking that big of a truck, but having increased capability, if you are, you know, on farms, places where you are off road, not necessarily for fun, but you need to get around. Yeah. Having that capability there, and they have branding with Tremor. So I think it makes sense to keep it as a package. Whether that changes in the future, we'll just have to wait and see.
And speaking of going off-road, or at least places where you can't plug into an electrical outlet, the Super Duty is now available with the Pro Power onboard system. It has a 2-kilowatt output, which is not, you couldn't run your house with it. But if you were, like the way Ford was selling it, if you're out on a job site, you could run a miter saw. If you were, I apologize. I am not streaming from my normal location. Apparently, my parents' phone is ringing. Hopefully, they answer that. But
anymore, yeah, you kill them, we kill them.
Yeah.
I had to get that in there.
No. Shame. The other thing, like if you were going camping, it would be perfect for that. You could plug in a camping stove, or you could plug in lights or anything like that. And 2 kilowatts would be plenty for that kind of functionality. So, and I mean, that's something that people are going to want, that you're at the job site, you're camping, you've got a farm and you need to plug in some sort of piece of equipment. You're just, you know, I think if you remember when Clint had it, they had the hybrid, which has had a little bit more capacity, but they just used the truck as like a mobile battery, essentially, for all their cameras and equipment.
It was like a focal point for the Motor One Awards. Just kind of like almost like their mobile command center.
Right.
So having that capability, I think for people using this truck in a contractor or really a work environment, absolutely a big deal. And there's a lot of tech in this thing too. It's got a head-up display. Mm-hmm. They've added more cameras to the back. They've got a secondary camera and sensor system that mounts on top of the tailgate for extra visibility back there. I love this feature they have on there. It's basically a one-touch button where you press the button, cameras and sensors will look back, see where the trailer is that you want to hook up to, back the truck up by itself, all hands free, right up to the hitch. Mm-hmm. So you can hook up the trailer. Anybody that's trailered quite a bit, you know, especially in the days before backup cameras.
Oh yeah.
After a while, you get used to the spatial awareness. You kind of sort of know where to back up. I mean, I've towed a lot back in the day, not so much with modern stuff. Having that one button capability, you just push it. You don't need somebody back there going, "You're all right. You're all right. Keep it coming. You're all right. You're all." No, just push the button. Let the truck do it. That's one hands-free, hands-off thing that I think is brilliant.
So Brandon, in our story about the new Super Duty, he does note two things that in his opinion are downsides. It's kind of, you know, buyer's choice as to whether or not they actually are, you know, different people want different things. For now, the Super Duty is combustion powered only. There is no hybrid.
No hybrid.
At least at launch, available for the Super Duty. Also, you are not going to be able to get Ford's Blue Cruise advanced driver assistance system in it, which, you know, I guess for a vehicle that you would use so much on maybe the highway and towing, it might be nice, but, you know, we got to wait for that tech to mature before that can happen, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, we're in some of these cases, we're talking about rigs that might be, what, like 20, 30,000 pounds all combined?
Sure.
That's a lot of mass to for an automaker to say, okay, we're comfortable in saying you can go hands off with our system. I imagine there's still some worry and some concern and just some testing that needs to take place there.
Sure. I think eventually, like if I bet in 5 years that tech's available. Certainly in like 10 years that tech's available. It's just, you know, it just has to mature enough and you know, eventually it will come.
No, could very well be. We do know that it's going to go on sale, I think.
Early 2023 is what we know.
Early 2023. They don't have any sort of pricing information available yet.
They do not.
I'm just kind of taking a quick look at my notes to see if there's anything that we didn't cover, and I don't think so.
Yeah, I think we pretty much did it.
Well, one of the neat features that I picked up on that I thought was worth mentioning, the navigation system is upgraded. And it's designed to take into account the trailer that you have, and it can plot. That's my combination of plot and route, right? Plot.
Okay. Yeah.
It can plot a route that can accommodate whatever size trailer you are carrying. So, I mean, if you run into, you know, areas that might have weight restrictions or things, it can take all that into account. I feel like Ford is really, really working hard to make this as convenient as possible for. Sure. For people using this truck in a work capacity.
Yeah, something that Jim Farley said during the live stream is that if Ford just separated its Super Duty out as its own business, it would be a Fortune 500 company. That's how much money they make off of these trucks. And so they want to keep that investment going because you don't want to lose that money.
Like, that's could you imagine if something happened and the F Series Super Duty and the F-150 just lost their buyers. I mean, Ford just would not exist anymore.
Pretty much.
These trucks are. So when you think of it in that perspective, you know what? Erring on the side of caution when it comes to design, that's a smart move. They don't have to be really daring to try to get people's attention. They already have the attention. So give people what they want. And I think the new truck, I think it looks good on the outside. I like the upgraded interior. There are still plenty of tactile buttons, knobs, and switches. Not everything is relegated to touch screens, which I think that demographic favors. So, yeah. Totally.
So let's talk about the truck that people are going to be cross-shopping the new Super Duty with, because it's the natural competitor. And that is that Chevrolet refreshed the Silverado HD this week. It came out a few days before the Ford, but, you know, again, it was heavy-duty truck week here at Motor One. And so, yeah, you get refreshed Silverado HD. I kind of like the way it looks in front. Honestly,
they improved
from an aesthetic purely aesthetically, I prefer it over the Ford. I think I like it.
I still don't.
To
describe what we're looking at, if you're familiar with the Silverado HD when it debuted, what was it, 2020? I think when it debuted, there was a lot of criticism.
Yes, there was over
that really big grill that actually extended over into the headlights, and it had the very narrow headlights at the top with the big grill in the middle. And my wife lovingly referred to it as the broiler pan grill because it just looked like a big broiler pan stuck on the front. It was a very polarizing design. I mean, there were some people that liked it, some that were okay with it. I remember hearing a lot of criticism. I definitely didn't like it myself. I thought it was just a very odd looking truck. I don't think they changed as much as we think on this facelift. You still have You still have that big, bold grill, but what they've done, instead of having that thicker upper section extend over into the headlights, I think that was a little off-putting. They got rid of that, and they basically, if you know what the GMC Sierra, the half-ton looks like, is it has sort of those C-shaped running lamps on the outside. It's like they took those and flipped them around and put them on the Silverado HD. Okay. So you have like that inverse C bracketing, the lights, and that separates the grill from the lighting elements. I think that's a cleaner design. They also changed the headlights a little bit. They're still pretty small, but it's not that one single rectangular strip.
Right.
And there's a new lower fascia. Like I said, I don't think they changed as much as a person might think looking at it. But
whatever they did, I think they did right though. I like it a lot more. So
it is. Yeah, I do as well. I think it's an overall improvement. Of course, we're spending time talking about the outside. That's pretty much all they did when it comes to exterior changes. The back is the same, sides are the same. On the hood, I think the word Chevrolet is now on that hood scoop.
They didn't do much.
Yeah, the exterior changes are really at the front. The big news here is the interior, and it's essentially an all new setup finally. And it's a much more handsome setup, I think.
I agree.
And Chevrolet actually, and I was a little surprised by this. They referenced the square body trucks from the 70s and 80s.
Story you wrote. I don't necessarily see the similarity. I haven't looked enough inside of those trucks, but
I don't really see it either, because I mean, we're looking at digital screens inside, right? It's a major digital makeover. The outgoing truck, it had sort of that really big kind of vertically oriented center stack that had those very large vents on either side of the central display. That's all gone now. It's a much thinner center stack, but the display is bigger. It's definitely cleaner.
Get to the sizes, because size matters in this case.
13.4 inch touchscreen. That's bigger than the outgoing one. The driver has a 12.3 inch digital display. You do need to go for the LT trim level or higher to get the driver digital display. Where the square body reference comes in, and this might be more prominent when you see it in person. I think it's hard to tell in pictures. That whole center stack is canted towards the driver. It's not just flat right across the way. It's canted towards the driver a little bit. So anybody that's been in those 70s, 80s, those square bodies, that's what they're talking about, how they have that center section that the kind of cants towards the, canted towards the driver a little bit. It's a thin reference, admittedly, but hey, the square bodies are hot right now. Mm-hmm. Everybody's wanting to get in on them. I can't blame Chevrolet for trying to pull up a little bit of retro reference here. The interior is just, it just looks so much better. So much
powertrains get some very, very small tweaks. You still get a 6.6 liter gasoline fueled V8 or a 6.6 liter Duramax diesel. Now the gasoline engine only hooks up to the Allison 10 speed automatic. Yep. And that gives you gross combined weight rating of 26,000 pounds, which is pretty hefty.
A little bit more. I think it was 24 before.
Yeah. And the Duramax now makes 470 horsepower, 975 pound-feet of torque. But Chevy is saying that the torque output is 25% better at low speeds for improved towing. So more low-end torque, always welcome, especially in a diesel.
Oh, yeah. And that's absolutely what you want in this category. Absolutely what you want.
And Chevy teased that a ZR2 off-road focus model is going to happen. They put out a teaser image of it, and that was basically it. They put out a teaser image. They said it's going to happen, and that's all we know.
Yeah, that's not basically. That is it. Yeah. I mean, in the press release, they just mentioned, ZR2 model coming. And then in the group of photos, there's just a picture of a pretty gnarly-looking black grill with a ZR2 badge on it. So there'll be a higher-performance HD Silverado in the near future. Yep. Has with the Ford, we don't have any information yet on pricing. Right. It'll go on sale sometime in the first half of next year.
Right.
And that's pretty much it for the Silverado.
Yeah. But still, you know, like it's nice to see these automakers coming out punching, like, we got a new heavy duty truck. We got a new heavy duty truck. And we have an all new Ford Super Duty. We have a refreshed Chevrolet Silverado HD. And we have a new model of the Ram heavy duty. You will be able to get the Ram Rebel in heavy duty trim.
Ram can't let these competitors just have all the spotlight this week.
Absolutely so not.
I love the way you phrase that. We have an all new Ford, we have a refreshed Chevrolet, and we have a new trim level for Ram. But yeah, all HD trucks, all happening just within a couple days of each other. And the Ram news is very, very new for us, as in we just got this a few hours ago. So I haven't had much time to study it. I do have the press release up here.
I looked at it a little bit, so I've got a little bit more. Yeah,
and I've looked at it too. I mean, it's still the familiar Ram heavy duty truck that, you know, it's just, you have the Rebel trim level now. So let me just read down some of the bullet points here.
Let me real quick, just because I think this is the thing that you should put in your mind as you think about this. Ram is positioning this as essentially a Power Wagon light. It is a step below the Power Wagon in terms of their lineup. It is both less expensive, but you get some of the equipment from the Power Wagon, not all of it. So kind of Power Wagon light.
Yes, I'm glad you said that. That's what I was about to say. They're positioning it between the Laramie and Power Wagon. It builds on the ultra capable Ram 1500 Rebel. Unique exterior design, aggressive off-road tires, skid plates, optional 12,000 pound winch. Your engine options here, standard 6.4 liter Hemi V8. You have the optional 6.7 liter Cummins turbo diesel. Horsepower, you got 410 with the Hemi, 370 horsepower with the diesel, 429 pound feet with the V8, 850 pound feet of torque with the diesel.
And it's worth saying, so it's interesting timing, because our colleague Brett T. Evans, he just did a full review of the Ram Power Wagon. Then that got published on August 9th. So it's kind of a nice point of comparison, and you cannot get the diesel with the Power Wagon.
Right.
You can only get the gas powered V8. So that is one differentiating factor between those two models.
Yep. That's actually what I was moving on to next, that Ram was saying, this is what customers have been clamoring for, and available 6.7 liter Cummins in basically the Power Wagon structure. Exterior styling shared with the Power Wagon, but Rebel features unique badging, sport performance hood from Mopar. Heavy duty Rebel also features unique off-road suspension, a rear limited slip differential, rear electronic locker, 20-inch wheels, 18s are optional, 33-inch off-road tires, skid plates, cargo tie-down, standard spray and bed liner, LED bed lighting, all the good stuff that you want with your heavy-duty Ram.
To differentiate against the Power Wagon, you can also get a front locking differential, which you can't get on the Rebel. So again, they're very similar trucks. They essentially took some stuff out, and they're offering people, you know, a less expensive truck with a lot of the same capabilities, just not all the same capabilities.
Right. And a little bit more on the suspension. It's a exclusive 5-link coil design, provides enhanced load carrying characteristics and articulation. An available rear air suspension system is also available. Well, they're press people. Available right back to back, really? An available rear air suspension system is also available and further enhances best-in-class ride and handling capabilities. Yes, I'm kind of going down the press release here, but I think you get the gist. It's the Power Wagon light. Only this time around, we have pricing information, Bruce. Look at this.
We do. So, you want to do it or you want me to?
No, I think you should do it.
Okay. There was one thing I wanted to mention, another Power Wagon Rebel differentiation. You can get the Rebel with a bench seat in front, whereas the Power Wagon only comes with dual buckets. So I guess if you're a bench fan, get the Rebel. Pricing, the Rebel starts at $67,045 plus a $1,895 destination fee. And since we keep comparing it to the Power Wagon, Power Wagon starts at, if you'll give me just a second here, the one that we tested was $72,275.
So it's a little less.
Yeah, it's a Power Wagon Light. You're giving up some features, but you're still getting a more capable truck than a Laramie. You know, and I guess that makes sense. There's probably some buyers out there who don't want the hardest of the hardcore truck, but they do want some of that off-road ability, and that's what this is going to do.
And I mean, looks wise, we've talked about the three Detroit, you know, the main brands for Detroit with their trucks. I still think Ram is number one in looks on half ton and their heavy duty trucks. Of the three that we just talked about here today, I think I would take the Ram. I mean, Ford certainly has the capability, and its look is improved. I guess it would be close between Ford and Ram, but I really much like how Ram styling the direction they've gone with this new generation.
Again, it's all aesthetics and it's all going to be subjective.
That's just a mean looking pickup truck without being overdone, in my opinion. The previous generation, the Ram grill was just ridiculous. It was so out of proportion with the rest of the truck. This generation, it's still large, but they've got the proportions dialed in better. The interior is a handsome interior. The Ford's interior is handsome as well. Chevrolet is now much better. But I still think I would take a Ram. And mind you, somebody that's owned a lot of Fords in his life.
Yeah, I don't know. This is a segment that while I respect, I don't have much like actual use for. Like, I don't need to tow anything. I don't need to do anything. But right. So purely on aesthetics, I think I like the new Chevy the best, I think.
Okay.
I don't know.
You're welcome to think that. What do you think, folks?
Yeah.
Is this a segue or what? What do you think? Ford Super Duty, Silverado HD, Ram HD with a emphasis on the Rebel. What do you like? You know what to do. Email us podcast@motorone.com. You can also comment on our YouTube videos that go up every Friday at Motor One Podcast. You can comment on our articles that go up at motorone.com every Friday, summarizing everything that we're talking about right here. And
speaking of people who emailed us, frequent commenter Rui Rika sent us an email that I loved so much, and thank I am going to much, read for you folks right now. And this is in response to our discussion last week of automotive horror movies, and he did a hell of a job. So he title ASX horror movie. Hi, it's been a while, but I'm still listening every week. Talking about automotive-based horror movies, here's a plot for one. There's a slightly dysfunctional family with a relative on its deathbed. One of the relative, say he's trying to save him, injects him with a mix of his own DNA and a virus known for killing many and almost slaughtering entire families. The sick one rises as an effective clone. His life is extended, but he will live on in pain and will die with no hope of cure or resurrection. What I am talking about is the new, for Europe, Mitsubishi ASX. It's such a bad case of badge engineering. It's just a Renault Captor with a different badge. This makes the Dodge Hornet look like legit platform sharing.
Oh, wow. Plot twist.
Now, about last week, the Impala from Supernatural has made such an impact that a friend of mine that isn't really into cars has been lusting after one since the show aired here.
I know, right?
about the new jingle. I like it. I'm still getting used to it. I just question the need for jingles in general for podcasts. For me, it's like the revving sound of an EV. It's not needed, but it's nostalgic of what came before. Still love what you guys do every week and keep rambling. That's a great email.
That's weedy. Hey, okay. The bar is set. Do you have a horror movie plot that tops that?
Yeah. Can you make an automotive horror movie about a car? Because that's perfect.
I love the plot. Just inject it with like DNA and, yeah, and a
virus. Its own DNA and a virus known for killing many and almost slaughtering entire families.
And you have the Mitsubishi ASX. Wow. Yeah. Very well done. Very well done indeed. I never thought of the Mitsubishi. I mean, I knew it was basically a Renault. But I mean, Mitsubishi, they've been doing that. I mean, that's kind of what they do now. You have the Eclipse Cross and you have the Mirage, but the Outlander, if I remember correctly, is pretty much a Nissan, is it not?
The new Outlander has the bones of a Nissan Rogue. And I want to say, I remember when our coworker Jeff Perez drove it, he said that the interior was very similar.
Right.
But they do have completely different exterior styling.
I should point that out.
I ask people, go check out our Mitsubishi ASX story, not because I wrote it, but because at last check, I believe there are 32 or 35 comments, and our commenters are just ripping this car apart. Like
we have some great commenters.
I just played it like down the middle, like here's a new Mitsubishi. And then our commenters just like took that and like, oh, it's just a Renault and just blah. Oh man. So yeah, I recommend reading the comments to the Mitsubishi ASX story.
Absolutely. Well, thanks much for that email. Again, podcastermotor1.com. We love to get stuff like this. We appreciate the laugh. You know, we're talking about Mitsubishi ASX and people kind of just dumping on it. Bruce, do you think, can you predict how people are going to respond to the BMW XM? Because that has just debuted as we're recording about an hour and a half ago. So we haven't had a chance to see the responses yet.
No, we have not. In fact, we have 5 comments to the story. I want to see them real quick.
Okay, let's do this, man. Live right here on the podcast. What are people saying about it?
We are loading. Okay.
As long as they're PG or at least PG-13.
Yeah. Yuck. What an absolutely tasteless disgrace. Wait, next comment. Congrats, BMW. It's as ugly as it can be.
Ooh, ouch. I don't think it's that bad. Come on, guys.
Much better looking than the concept. Everyone's saying that all SUVs look alike, and BMW decides to do something different. Why all the complaints?
There we go.
I don't see Audi or Mercedes doing what this does. They're all being very modern in their designs as of late. Take the Q6 that was recently revealed in China. It looks like they mashed SUVs together. Good on BMW for taking a different approach. And then the last one is, who signed off on this design language? It's absolute puke.
So polarizing.
Polarizing. Yeah, that's the best.
Is a good way to describe it. Bruce, let's give people a look at this because, yep. I mean, if you remember the concept, I mean, obviously the concept was very polarizing. The XM is, it's toned down, but
a
I mean,
little.
I mean, I'll be the first to admit it's, It has presence. I can't remember, and I'm pulling up my notes here. I can't remember who said it in our Teams chat. Was it managing editor Brandon Turkus? I can't remember who said it. But it was like the designers just didn't stop designing.
That was Brandon. Yes, he said the designers didn't put down their pens.
And we're looking at it now. Okay, so the grill isn't quite as massive as the concept, but its presence is still there. It's a very wide grill, but there's so much going on.
At
the front. I mean, it is
not just at the front, from the side, from the back. There are lines everywhere you look.
It's not a clean design. But oddly enough, I think from the front, just the contrasting angles, it's very busy. I would prefer something cleaner, but there's there's a certain symmetry and proportion there that I don't hate. I mean, I don't know if I can say I like it, but I don't hate it. And I think that's saying something. Obviously, it still has the split light design that was so controversial with the 7 series. And I think it, I think the split lights work here. I think the best view from this is definitely like a front three quarter view, because Bruce, you mentioned that there were lines everywhere. And I think it does look a bit theoretical from the back, maybe. it might be a good way to put it. There are lots of just kind of squared off areas, contrasting angles.
Right. There's some areas that are squared off, and then you look at the hatch and it's kind of sculpted, and it's like, yep. Well, why didn't you stick with the chiseled thing? You were doing that everywhere else. And then you were like, eh, we're just going to sculpt this little piece here nicely underneath the window.
It's very extensively designed. But as the one commenter in the story already said, you know what? Nobody else is doing it like BMW right now, for better or for worse, whether you love it or whether you hate it. BMW is walking its own path. And
they are.
I have a certain amount of respect for that. I think this could be better. I think this could be worse. I think those wheels are a bit much. It does. We've been talking about the design. We should talk about some of the other aspects, like, it's available with 735 horsepower. That's going to be a red label edition that's coming out later. Right now, it launches with 644 horsepower, and you get that from a combined 4.4 liter twin turbo V8 and an electric motor. This is a plug-in hybrid. The engine itself is 483 horsepower, 479 pound-feet of torque. The electric motor then adds another 194 horsepower.
Let me get to the point that our boss, Adrian, has been harping on since we got these embargo materials, mm-hmm. and that is a vehicle. This is a vehicle that weighs 6,000 pounds.
It's
6,062 pounds, to be precise.
It's
the heaviest production BMW ever made.
And BMW actually, I think, said that. I mean, they owned it, right? They just come right out and said, this is the heaviest BMW production model we've ever made. That is 3 tons of M, which we joked, okay, in this case, M equals massive. But then Adrian was like, well, it's XM, so it's extra massive. It is big. This thing has the wheelbase of an X7, but it only seats 5 people. So it's long, it's big, it's wide, but it'll do 0 to 60 in 4.1 seconds. That's pretty quick. And the interior, I think, is gorgeous.
Oh, there you and I completely disagree.
What? No. The dash layout with the screens, just the color combo.
No.
I think it's a pretty clean design. I think it's an interesting dichotomy to what's going on outside. But I think the interior is a clean design. It's got 100 LEDs in the headliner. 100 LEDs in the headliner to create special lighting effects. I would love to just cruise in this thing. Just jump in, travel, go long distance. It's fast.
Yeah. You don't
have, I mean, and it's not offensive to look at the outside. It's not.
So the thing is, it's not offensive. What it is that, and I say this as an American, it looks very American. It looks,
yeah.
I could almost imagine this as like a future scenario Hummer SUV. It looks very brawny. It looks very tough. It looks very military.
That's a good way to describe it. It looks very brawny. And if you follow the trend lately of automakers offering everything with like a midnight package or a blackout package, this is the opposite of that. The trim and the accents on this thing are all over the place, and they are bright, and you will never miss them. I wonder how it would look if all it like the grill surround, that big strip going around, you know, up the belt line and around the rear window. I wonder how all that would look if it was black or body color.
Well, I think we're going to end up seeing that. You know, I think once we hit the road, that some people are going to, not everyone is going to spec it out in this weird kind of grayish green with bronze accents. Like that's going to be a very personal color choice.
It's an attention getter. That's for sure.
It is.
But yeah, I mean, we mentioned the 23-inch wheels. I think they say 21s are also available if you don't want the 23-inchers. 6,062 pounds. But Bruce, it's nearly 50-50 weight distribution. How shocking would it be if this thing handles pretty well? It is an M vehicle. And in fact, it is the first standalone M vehicle since the BMW M1.
Yeah, I didn't want to bring that up because that's not...
It's not
the way you want to follow that up.
It's not an M1, but it's a standalone M product.
It is.
I'm not sure I'm even in the right universe right now, because I feel like I'm the one defending BMW for a change. Instead of dumping on the grill, which admittedly I've done.
I'm fine with the grill. The grill doesn't bother. Like the bronze. No, I'm talking the personal thing. But
when I say grill, I'm talking the 4 Series.
Like I said,
it's a very busy design, and I wish it would be a little bit cleaner, but the proportions seem to work for me. At least that much seems to click. And with 3 tons distributed almost 50-50, I would love to see how this thing handles and gets down the road. I mean, yeah, we said it, the wheelbase is identical to the X7, but it only seats 5. The interior, I think, is just gorgeous. It's full of tech.
We didn't mention the price, right? Am I mistaken?
We haven't mentioned the price, and we do have pricing for this.
We do. So the base model, the less powerful one that's going to arrive first, that is going to be $159,995 with destination.
Right. Not so cheap, but
call it 160 essentially. Yeah. The more powerful version with the over 735 horsepower, that is going to be $185,995 once it arrives. So again, call it 186. Again, not cheap, but we know there are buyers for this price class and category of vehicle. In fact, literally the next topic is going to be something that this is literally going to compete against.
Do you want to jump into that? Because I think we've covered the XM pretty well.
Yeah, I think so. Like, I'm not trying to be a hater. Like I guess, and this is reductivist to say, is that I don't get it. Like I totally get it.
I totally get it. It's all about the Benjamins, baby.
I know. Thank you, Sean Puffy Combs.
In fact, we just did a Motor One numbers article 3 weeks ago or so when the Puro Sangue came out, just looking at how other automakers with their super SUVs are stepping into this lucrative market. And you know what? It is a lucrative market. Buyers are stepping up. Buyers want these SUVs that they can drive around every day and still feel like they're in their supercar, right? The affluent buyers. And BMW is taking a bigger step into that world here with the XM. It's a dedicated M vehicle. It's got tons of power. With that weight distribution, it might be pretty nimble and tossable. Nimble might be a bad word, but
Nimble might not.
It could change direction with quite a bit of shock and surprise. I would wager that that's the case. But let's talk about a potential competitor to that. That's
I think common. A literal. I don't even know that potential is the word. I think if you've got $186,000 for a BMW, then a Bentley Bentayga S or a Bentley Bentayga Hybrid S or a Bentley Bentayga Hybrid Azure could theoretically, you know,
and that's where we're going right now with this new Bentley. And in fact, it is so new, it hasn't debuted yet as we're recording.
Correct.
And I haven't even seen it yet. So Bruce, I'm going to have to rely on you a little bit for this one. You've had a chance to look at some of the early materials. I have not.
I have.
So give us an education.
Take it away. Sure thing. So Bentley Bentayga Hybrid has been around for a while. It's it takes the Bentayga, it adds a plug-in hybrid powertrain to it. Sorry, I'm tripping over my words as I'm looking up things to tell folks about it. That has existed for a while. They are introducing an upgraded version. The upgrades include the battery is now 18 kilowatt hour capacity rather than 13 kilowatt hours. This nets you, and this is for Europe, so these are conversion numbers. We don't have EPA numbers yet, but in Europe, you now can go 27 miles on purely electric power. Previously, you could go 25 miles. So
a little bit better.
A little bit better. 2 miles. It's not nothing. But what you also get is more total output from the powertrain. So they are now getting 456 horsepower, whereas previously it was getting 443. So more range and more power. Now, we have to agree, they're minor steps in that direction. But hey, better is better. What is separating these two models is that the Hybrid S comes with a stiffer suspension, more aggressive tune for the traction control, and a new exhaust that apparently gives it a deeper sound. Also, it comes standard with the black line package that blacks out the exterior, and the what would usually be chrome are now their kind of smoked black chrome kind of finish. Let me switch pictures here. So we're looking at something else. Sorry, I'm juggling all sorts of stuff. This green car we're looking at here, this is the Azure model, which any like fans of Bentleys would know. Back in the day, a Bentley Azure was the drop top version of their coupe, but they, you know, that name is gone and they've revived that name. And it is now the luxury version of the Bentayga. So
definitely a hard top, not a convertible SUV.
No, it is. It is a Bentayga. It just has the Azure name on it. It is the more luxury-oriented version. So it comes standard with the front seat comfort package that gives you 22-way power-adjustable seats with heating and ventilation and diamond quilting on them. Buyers can also choose from 15 different colors of leather and 3 types of wood. So if you're all about that luxury, the Azure is the way to go. We're looking inside of it here and you can see very nice wood, very nice leather, exactly as you would expect from a Bentley. If you want a little bit something sportier from your Bentayga, then the S model is the way to go. But both of them benefit from these hybrid system improvements. So,
yeah, I mean, just small changes, but
it's not groundbreaking, but for someone who would be thinking about buying one of these vehicles, you got more power and more range and either more sportiness or more luxury, depending on what you want from that vehicle. Those are all, I am not a Bentley buyer, but I have to imagine luxury, speed, and exclusivity are all things that they would want. And they did all three of those things by adding these two new variants.
Well, I am a Bentley buyer, but I still think, like 118 scale. I still think I would go with a BMW. Do we know what the pricing is on the,
we do not.
On this?
So we only have European, all the stuff I gave you was translated from European specs. So like metric horsepower,
sure,
and the ranges and stuff like that. Let me double triple check here.
I'm trying to think of what the Bentayga is normally, and it's a Bentley. It's pricey, right?
Right. So we do not. I just double checked. We do not have pricing information for either of these right now. I will, just because we all love to see how things have changed. Here is a picture of the first gen Bentley Azure. So you can see how much things have changed.
It's pretty similar. It's not.
It's the Monty Python and now for something completely different.
Yeah, it's definitely different over the years, but hey, SUVs are where it's at right now. Totally. I think it's interesting. The number of these luxury performance SUVs that we're seeing entering the market. Obviously, I mean, we have the XM now from BMW, the plug-in hybrid, the Puro Sangue from Ferrari.
the Urus, the Bentayga, the Cullinan.
Are we gonna reach a point where that market is saturated?
Yes.
To the point where just nobody's gonna be buying them anymore?
I don't know about that. I think there are going to be wealthy people that want that, but there's going to be some point where we get to, you know, the 12th, the 13th, the 14th entry in this market, and people are gonna be like, no, I'll take the one from XYZ brand because it does this for me.
Right.
You know, think about your top level sedans. You can kind of name them on one hand. You have your S class, you have your Bentley, you have your Rolls Royce, you have maybe Lexus squeezes in there, maybe an A8 squeezes in there. But it ends up being less than 10 cars basically. Mm-hmm. And I think it's going to be the same for this segment, because while there are a lot of people out there with a lot of money, you can only split that up so many ways. And, you know, mm-hmm. you might be able to have some boutique entry that appeals to a very certain segment of those people. But yeah, I think at some point we will reach the breaking point, and one of these is going to fail. It's just a matter of time.
Well, from large vehicles to a smaller one, do you want to talk about Z4?
I do. It's funny.
BMW debuted one of their heaviest production vehicle ever. And then literally at the same time, the embargo went up for the refreshed BMW Z4.
Right. So
considerably smaller.
As I understand, in terms of mechanically, not a lot is different here.
It's still the same.
And prayed that the manual was going to come for the inline six. And as far as I know, it didn't, right?
No, not yet.
It did not happen. But they not did yet. Give it. It's like, I feel like some XM designers might have like moonlighted over onto the Z4 side for like a couple days.
Designing. I can't stop. The next project?
So here, okay, I can set this up perfectly. I can't get these both on the screen at the same time, but that's fine. Can put these two vehicles up in the same angle together. So let me get my shared screen here going. So here is the new Z4 from a front three-quarter perspective. Okay. So yep,
we got that.
I kind of dig that kind of metallic purple color, actually.
It's a beautiful color. And we should say, I mean, there is a light refresh on the new Z4.
Right.
The front end is restyled. Yep, yeah, we're looking at it right now. It's got different corner vents. The M Sport package is standard issue, which just makes it a little jazzier. But let's see how the previous generation looked, Bruce.
So here is the new one. For anyone watching on YouTube, you can see it now. And I'm going to stop my screen, and I'm going to share my other screen. And here's the old one.
Because the new one is definitely busier.
Right. It's much pointier.
Pointier. It's much busier.
Yeah. And so we'll go back and forth here a little bit. So again, we got the old one. It's not, I wouldn't call it smooth. It's not like, you know, a super like sleek car.
It looks much smoother compared to the new one.
Right. But then you get to the new one and it's like, oh.
You get to the new one and it's
angles everywhere.
Yep.
Make it pointy. That's what I feel like the design brief on this car was. Make it pointy.
Lots of edges, lots of angles. It's not bad. I don't think it's bad.
No. It's not bad at all. It's funny to see BMW's design language, especially in the same week that we see the XM debut, mm-hmm. and they're like, you know what we're doing now? Pointy. Edges, baby. All the edges.
Just more edges, more points. The powertrains are unchanged. There's the four-cylinder and the six. You get the four-cylinder in this, I think, right?
Yes, you can. Yes.
Yep. Four-cylinders. Powertrain is unchanged. Interior, pretty much the same as it was.
Right.
There's the M Sport package that's standard on the S-Drive 30i. It's got sport seats, the M leather steering wheel, pedals, footrest, dashboard. upholstered in SensaTech leather.
And again, so I just went back and forth here from the same angle. Here is the old Z4, or the, you know, the pre-refresh Z4. And here's the new Z4 from exactly the same angle. And it's just like, make it pointy, baby.
And this would be a good one for us to do a see the changes on.
It would be, yeah.
We don't have that written yet. Hopefully by the time you hear this podcast on Friday, we'll have one written up. We have a very busy week with all the debuts happening. There are more debuts happening that that we can't talk about quite yet that are in the pipeline. But yeah, this would be a good one to do a see the changes on. We'll see if we can get that rolling.
I want to say, I don't actually dislike this design. I think both of them look good. But the thing that I think is hilarious is that the same week the XM debuts, and it's all sorts of angles and lines and stuff like that. It just looks like some guy who had someone at BMW really likes angles and lines right now. And he's like, or maybe she, that person is just like, let's do it to the Z4 too. You know, let's take what we did and make it pointier.
It's definitely a more aggressive look. I think it's attractive. It's interesting because the car kind of transitions. They didn't really do much different on the rest of the car. So
you have
lots of angles and edges, contrasting angles, everything up front, and those corner vents are pretty sizable too. And then as you move towards the back, you start getting back into some curves. I think it's a good looking car.
I don't think it's bad at all.
I don't think it's bad at all.
I've always kind of had a thing for the Z4. You know, it and the Toyota, the Supra kind of get a bad rap just because of their similarities. And I think to a certain extent, the Supra has kind of dragged down the Z4. If we just had the Z4, I think there'd be a lot more enthusiasm about it. Whereas the Supra exists, so it just feels like they're both kind of a compromise, even though I don't necessarily know that's true. But I think the general perception amongst kind of the automotive folks out there kind of thinks that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's interesting.
And just as a refresher, I mean, the powertrains are unchanged. That's the 2-liter turbo with 255 horsepower. That's the 4-cylinder, 295 pound-feet of torque. Then you have the inline six that's 382 horsepower. 369 pound feet, still just the automatic, but yeah, there have been rumors that the 6-speed will be offered, but as of right now, that's a big no. And the revised model does go on sale in November with a starting price of $52,800. That's the base model, $65,400 for the M40i. There is $995 in destination charges that need to be added in.
Cool. I think we're kind of wrapping up. Did you have anything else you want to talk about? I think we're kind of wrapping things up because I wanted to talk about, I didn't want to reveal our guest for next week, but I wanted
to
have a guest.
We need to tease that. So yeah, we're going to wrap up here a little bit early. Hey, I'm going to use this for a shameless plug. Does anybody want to buy a 2004 Mazda 6 with 113,000 miles and no check engine light? It has fixed itself. Actually, the shop recommended to just keep driving it. It was diagnosed as a sticking cam phaser, which
they just need an Italian tune up and just kind of rev the balls off.
That was the implied you know part of it. Just hey, you know, spin it up, get that thing moving a little bit more. Those cam phasers on some of the variable valve timing engines can stick. In this case, trying to get in to replace it is a very extensive procedure. But if you can just get it unstuck, you're fine. And I had done an oil change and added some heavier oil treatment to try to help seal up a small oil leak from the timing cover. And it worked. But I think that's what led to that sticking cam phaser. Well, that issue is now officially gone. The check engine light's been off for a week. The car is running like a top, but I'm not taking it to Michigan. So email podcast@motorone.com. You can get Christopher Smith's Mazda 6.
I'll make you a very good deal. Smith will even autograph the dashboard if that's what it takes to sell you.
I will autograph the dashboard. I can pee in the back and mark it. I can do whatever you want. No, we have decided to just go ahead and move on from the Mazda. So, hey.
Okay.
Speak up and email podcast@motorone.com.
Let's tease our guest next week, because we haven't had a guest for a little while. You and I, you're in the middle of a move. I'm in the middle of some family things. You and I have, unfortunately, we have not had many guests the last few weeks, but we have one next week, and it's pretty cool.
I'm very excited for this guest. This has been a few months here in the works. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to give it away, but I will say there is a Hollywood connection.
I put in the post, and a
car connection.
Yes, I put in the post last week, fans of 80s TV might want to tune in.
Right. Now, this isn't a celebrity. This is, I want to make a, don't tune in, you know, thinking, oh, they're going to talk to Bo Duke. No. We're not talking to a celebrity, but this is a very prominent person on YouTube, social media, that's done some amazing things. Not just him, but there's another person that he works with, and we've been trying to get him on the program for a while. Been doing some stuff just recently that's just awesome. And yeah, if you are a fan of 80s television, maybe that gives it away already, but you'll want to tune in next week.
Does.
There are a few good 80s programs that have some notable vehicle connection. So sure. You'll definitely want to tune in next week. I'm super excited about this. It's going to be a great time. So listen in, come ready with your questions. I think it's time for my spiel. Email podcast@motorone.com about my Mazda or anything else. You can always catch our videos on YouTube, Motor One Podcast. We're on Spotify, Google, Apple, like a dozen or so streaming platforms. Catch our articles that go up every Friday at MotorOne.com. You also want to catch Editor-in-Chief Seth Miersma and the MotorOne.com editorial staff. Every Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern, they do their Motor One Happy Hour, where it's just like a half hour's worth of casual discussion of some of the new vehicles they're driving. Last week, Bruce, you were on it. It was a special episode talking about the daily driver. So
about personal cars, except for Jeff Perez, who we helped try to buy a car. I've been Jeff
trying to buy a car for like 2 years.
I think it's longer than that. Yeah. So.
So yeah, a little supplement there. If rambling about cars just isn't quite enough for you, you'll definitely want to check that out every Friday. Mm-hmm. And I think that about does it. Whew, it's been a week. We've seriously had more debuts just in the last couple of days than we had in Detroit. And it's a little surprising, but hey, that's how things are going these days.
If I was an organizer of the Detroit Auto Show, I would be a little nervous right now. Just because of people clearly not deciding to debut stuff. It's interesting. But it was its first year back. Who knows? Next year could be even better, even bigger, even more beautiful. Yep. So
Chevrolet, they wanted to debut their truck at the State Fair of Texas.
Yes. So the Ram was also at the State Fair of Texas.
And the Ram. So I mean that's Detroit Auto Show is big, but I mean, honestly, their market is probably more in an area like Texas, you know, the State Fair. Sure. So, I mean, I guess if I was an organizer for the Detroit Auto Show, I'd be a little bit nervous, but I'd also be understanding, I think, a little bit. But it was still kind of surprising to get hit with so many vehicle debuts so soon after a major auto show.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Well, and now my spiel. Afternoon, good evening, or good night, folks. We appreciate you. As Smith said, podcast@motorone.com is the email address. Motor One Podcast is the YouTube site. We love you. Can't wait till next week. It'll be fun to have a guest again. But hope you enjoyed the pickup talk and the hybrid SUV talk, and then a little bit of sports car talk at the end. But yeah, appreciate you, and we'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.